order. Resolution 670.
Doc, can you start putting your mic closer, please?
Thank you.
Resolution 670.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. Favor.
Aye.
Post. Carry. 679.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. Favor.
Aye.
Aye. Post. Carry. 680.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor.
Aye.
Aye. Post. Carry. 681.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Second. Discussion.
Aye.
Aye. 682. Do you have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
I have a motion for proposed amendment number one.
Is anybody opposed to any of the technical amendments?
No.
I'm thinking of the block.
Okay. Motion block. Second.
Second.
1, 2, 3, 4, 12, 30.
Yep.
Second.
Second.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Proposed budget amendment number five. Second.
I'll second for discussion.
Discussion. Discussion on number five.
Call a question.
All right. Favor. Six. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second. Second. Discussion.
I just, again, want to say that I think it's really important that we don't outsource this, that we endeavor to bring it in-house, to get the system and keep ourselves, and probably will be paying the part, so I definitely do.
I, just very briefly, I agree with the chair 100%, and I actually think that this has the potential, if it's as successful as I think it is, to become a shared service possibility for the towns.
There.
Aye. Oh, sorry.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to actually present a late amendment, if possible, in relation to the amendment that was just in front, just voted on. Pardon me?
An amendment to the amendment.
An amendment.
We just defeated the amendment, so that's a challenge.
So what I'd like to propose, first of all, I want to say I'm very much in support of having full-time staff in the grants department. I think a robust grants department is really necessary, and I'm looking forward to getting them installed and working with them going forward. But what I'd like to propose is that we put together a stopgap solution, because I don't see us having these folks in place for at least another 4, 5, 6, who knows how many months. And there are a lot of grants that are coming down the pipe that I think we are missing out on. So what I'd like to propose is that we take a portion of the salaries that will be going towards these full-time grants folks and bring in a consulting team. There are several really great consulting teams here in the Hudson Valley that have worked specifically on obtaining grants from municipalities. And I think that we should contract with an outsourced grants agency that has a team of folks that have special skills in a variety of grants, from water and sewer grants to mental health grants, that type of thing, and get the ball rolling. And then when we get these permanent folks installed, we can then hand off all that work to those people. So we're not missing out on a lot of possible grants, and we're not losing time. There's no real ramification for this except transferring some of the salaries that would have gone to these folks, and I think it would be a really, really smart thing for us to do so that we don't miss out on potentially millions of dollars.
Thanks. Through you, Mr. Chairman, to the executive's office. What's the time frame? Is this time frame on this amendment that Lister Crystal has handed out July accurate on when you think you're going to be hiring these positions?
I think, Lister Rock, I think the you know, obviously we're actively recruiting for these positions. I think if there's an opportunity to be able to hire these positions, I guess my question back would be is if there's an opportunity where we're able to identify a candidate sooner, would we be able to, would this preclude us from being able to hire somebody sooner?
No, to the best of my ability, no. I think that we could pull out of the agreement very easily. And just so you know, I had a long conversation with the county executive about this and have her full support.
Can I ask a question through the chair of the executive branch over there? Who does our grant writing right now? Because we are still receiving a lot of grants. The planning department does a great job with grants, right? I mean, we are constantly approving grants. We can get grants for the private sector now sometimes. And so I just don't understand why we can't. And what I'm concerned about is you bring in a team, and their job is to produce and to get grants. And they know they're only going to be here a couple of months, so they're going to go out and get grants that may have legacy costs. Sometimes I think we end up, I always use the drone there that nobody knows what's going on with it, or we got a grant for it. So we got a drone. I don't know. Maybe somebody might have got a drone license, but I don't think we do a lot with the drone. So sometimes by going out and just being grant happy, you end up doing things that you wouldn't do, maybe even creating positions you wouldn't create that don't end up sunsetting. So for the time being, for a couple of months, couldn't we just, the people that are doing, we must have some good people doing grant writing because we're constantly getting grants. Maybe we need more, I guess, with these positions. But why couldn't we, when we have a capital project, when we have an initiative over the next couple of months, we tell them, these people that are already doing some of this work here in the county, hey, can you go and see if there's any grants for this? And then when the positions come in, they come in.
So I hear what you're saying about the sort of drift, and, you know, I've seen it in nonprofits where, oh, there's a shiny grant out there, now all of a sudden we're going to, you know, do this thing. I don't think that's the intention at all with this. I think it's really working in concert with what's already lined up and what's really urgent and needed. So I don't think it's going to be about creating fancy new programs because there's potential monies out there. I think it's more about looking at what's right on the table here that we can't do because we don't have the bandwidth to actually fulfill what's needed right here. What is that? There's CFA grants that are coming up. There's state grants that are happening. So this would all be done in very close concert with the Department of Budget and asking them what their needs are and what are they looking at. So it wouldn't be a grant maker who's doing this or a grant writer who's doing this just all on their own accord. It would be very, very much in consultation with what are the needs of the department and what are they looking to do.
Could I get my question answered, though? Who does our grant writing now? Because we're receiving a lot of grants.
I think a number of our departments do grant writing on an ad hoc basis. I think what this would enable us to do is to be able to further centralize, to be able to further look at additional grant opportunities that we're potentially missing. I think, a number of our department heads do a good job at looking and finding grants, but I think there are some additional grants that we'll be able to identify and find by having somebody that's dedicated to that purpose.
Chair Hartness.
So one of the challenges that we heard was the hiring challenge, which is what I think Vice Chairperson was speaking to, and I think the question may be is the salary that we're proposing, which I know is higher, is it enough? That's the first question. I'd like to remain optimistic that we're lifting immediately and that ideally we could hire sooner than July. I could see myself being supportive of professional services for outside grant writer while maintaining what's proposed by the executive department for the positions, knowing that if we haven't been able to hire the person, some of that savings is going to come out of the not hiring the line. I don't really like the idea of hedging our proverbial bets that we're not going to hire until July, so I'd like to remain optimistic that we will. And I'd also like to see 76 863 isn't enough, then we should be asking for more. Because, again, building an in-house department of grant writing and following on the minority leader's comment about the eventuality of potential for shared services in municipalities is an ultimate win-win. Like, that's where we want to head, is building up a strong department. But in the instance, the vice chair is raising a good point about, well, if there isn't the possibility to get someone hired right out of the gate in January, can we contract, if those people do exist, to just come on board for a very specific call, then I would say let's have that as a separate resolution for contractual, increasing our contractual services.
Thanks. You know, regardless of the, you know, of the utility of this amendment, regardless of whether we think it makes good sense or not, I think that Ways and Means shouldn't take any action on it, and it should be voted on the floor. I just think that something coming this last minute, no offense, let's take this all, but something coming to the committee this last minute after we spent 6 hours last Monday and then a couple more on Tuesday, you know, vetting these and having some time with them, I think that this shouldn't come with our seal of approval. I also tend to agree with, you know, Chairman Bartels that, you know, it's not necessarily, I think we should reduce this, these lines. If the executive's office agrees, as Legislator Crystal says, the executive's on board, you know, then that sounds like a resolution in January to, you know, hire a grant writing company, which, you know, we could do out of any number of other fees for professional services lines.
I think the one thing I would note, though, is with the budget department being separated from finance at this point, the budget department's budget is relatively small, so we would need some professional services in order to be able to actually contract and do this.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's $100 million in fund balance. Just throwing it out there. With that.
My one concern with us waiting is that we're then going to be into January, which means we wouldn't really get any contract group up to speed until February. So we're talking about December, January, totally off the table with doing any sort of research or doing any kind of work. And I think if we did actually outsource this, there are several companies that are out there that could step in pretty much immediately and get this thing rolling.
The budget doesn't take effect until January 1st anyway. The organizational meeting happens that week. The chair, whoever's going to be the chair next year, I won't be here to vote on it in the org meeting, but whoever's the chair could entertain a resolution at the organizational meeting to hire a grant writer or to instruct the county executive's office to obtain a grant writer. Anything that happens in this budget is not going to happen in December.
Just to the point that Ken just made a minute ago, too, that there's a process that this body has always worked under, and these kinds of conversations happen last week, and they'll only have two. I think it's the first time in the history of this legislative body did not have a quorum of Ways and Means here for those, you know, I think Rich used to bring in
meatballs.
A bunch of meatballs and homemade food, and the legislators and all of Ways and Means and a lot of other legislators would be here and vet and go through hour after hour after hour for two straight days. And the second day, there were four of us sitting here. So this is something that should wait. And if it was that important, then people on Ways and Means should have been here, to be honest.
I hear that. I just want to let you know that I did listen to all 8 hours of sessions. So I was present as present as I could be.
I don't think we actually even got a second to listen to Crystal's amendment, so. Is there anyone willing to second? So fail for a second, so you want to continue the session. Amendment number 8, can I have a motion?
I'll move it for discussion.
Second. Wait, can you come to the next? Sorry, I missed that. Second?
I'll make
a second. Discussion?
No.
All in favor? Opposed? Amendment number 8, can I have a motion?
For discussion.
Second. Second. Discussion. All in favor? Opposed?
Number 9.
With the front.
Yeah. 10.
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion?
I think it's worthwhile. I think that there's a lot of positives to it. I definitely think that there are details that need to be flushed out, but I think that they can be flushed out before the legislature passes the contract next year.
Yeah, I'm going to be supportive of this, particularly when reminded that we were supportive before, and due to COVID, it wasn't able to actually participate or utilize the funds. I just want to make sure or state on the record that upcoming legislature should make sure that it's equitable, however it's fleshed out, that it actually reaches across jurisdictions in a fair way.
Yeah, thank you. I want to take that a step further. I mean, there are some fire districts in this county that can afford to pay their own way. They have beautiful complexes, have hefty taxes for the residents, but some of the smaller towns don't have the ability to do that. And so I would like to see, make sure that those smaller towns are given a preference for this over some of the larger ones. I won't be here either, but for me, that's money well spent for these smaller departments that don't have, you know, the tax base to go out there and raise their taxes. And if they get a $5,000 a year tax rate in some of these districts, that's a lot. And, you know, other ones can raise it hundreds of thousands, if not into $1 million grant sources. So that's about 2 cents.
Okay. All those in favor? Number 11. Can I have a motion? Second.
Discussion.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor? Votes. Number 13. Can I have a motion? Second. Discussion. All those in favor? Opposed? 14, can I have a motion?
Make motion.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor? Opposed? 15, can I have a motion? Second.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor? Yes. Opposed? Carry. 16, can I have a motion?
Make a motion.
Second. Discussion.
At least many of us, but myself included, were explicit that this was a conversation for budget time, and it's budget time, so I'm going to be supportive of it. And we've heard a lot about it, so again, I'm supportive of it in this context.
I've been very close to this all along. I just didn't think it really warranted. And I was also concerned that we have a new DA coming in, but I understand that he is on board with this position, so I will support it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We're on 16. That's correct.
Yeah.
17. Can I have a motion?
Make a motion for discussion.
I'll second for discussion.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Wait. So, I've been on the record on this before, and I want to say that I do have so much respect for my colleague, Legislator Green, but unfortunately I'm not going to be able to support it because of the issues that I've raised before. I'm more just stating that on the record, but just also to say that I share your concerns and I have tremendous respect for you, but I won't be able to support it today.
Yeah, I would just like to say that similarly, this is really important that we do this, but this isn't the way to do it, and so I'm committed to working to really do this type of work, but not from the outside in. Mm-hmm. I think we have to find a way to get inside and then do this work.
Let's say agree.
Yeah, I keep hearing it, and with all due respect, we have done things. I don't think it's appropriate for a climate emergency, which this county has declared And I think we really have to think about, if we don't fund it, is it going to get done? And is it important to do? And I feel like the answer to the first question is, if we don't fund it, something will get done, but not what is appropriate to a climate emergency that more and more studies are showing is exacerbating much faster. I wish it weren't so, but it is, and I think we need to respond to both. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to echo what Legislator Nolan was saying. I'm very much in support of the idea, and I'm hoping that we can find a way to do it through supporting school, some of the school groups, student groups, some way to make it a more organic process internally that then rises up to the school administration and the school board to get them to bring funding to this. So, again, I'm very supportive of the concept, but I don't think that this is the right way to do it.
Yeah, I kind of tend to agree with what Legislator Green was saying about how it's not, but nothing is happening. So we can say it, and we've got to the point where we've gotten involved as a county in so many other things, from grants to subsidizing developers, that we can't help our own school district to get a little more involved there. We would be forcing ourselves on them. But these school districts are, all they hear about is how high the school taxes are. That's all the town supervisors do, and it's fair, it's all we do. The majority of the tax complaint when you're a homeowner is your school district. And these school districts are just not taking the initiative, I think a lot because of the money. And I think we could even treat this like a pilot program. And I think it's worth the try for 2 years. To see if we can get something going. There's so much low-hanging fruit there with regards to all the composting, all the education, all the different things we could do with these school districts that aren't being done. So it would be of all the money we spend and all the things we do with the trails and all these great things we do with these tens of millions of dollars, I think we could really take a shot here. And there's a lot of environmental low-hanging fruit with these schools that aren't being done. And it's our county and our school districts in our county. So I am for going for this, and I thought BOCES was an okay way to go about it. But there's different ways that we could have went, but we're just going to shut it down. I think it was worth going for.
All of them there. Votes. 18 drawn. Number 19. Yeah, motion.
Make a motion.
Second.
Discussion.
So I'm not going to be supportive of this, in part because it's the position, Director of Parks. I really commend Legislator Hewitt's passion on this, and I think that what came up in terms of the outdated nature of our parks and open space plan, that's where we need to begin. You know, we have three county parks, and to me, it just doesn't yet make sense to have a director of parks, but I do think we ought to be spending, and we shall come up later in one of the resolutions, but actually investing in updating that open space and parks plan, which might then necessitate down the road a person.
Yes, thank you. So I agree. I think, and I wish Legislator Hewitt was here. But, you know, I do agree with his outlook on this. I think, you know, we do have parks, we do have trails that we're responsible for, and it's neglected, I think, as an entity overall. I don't think we spend enough time looking at everything together and what we could be doing there. I have some reservations about it being a full-time position since, you know, basically with the exception of maybe doing some skiing in the wintertime, there's not going to be a lot of activity in our parks or on our trails in the winter, right? So I just think that this is something that may fit better under an existing DPW head or department head there who can just, you know, take a look in the department and say, you're responsible for overseeing this particular aspect of county parks and trails. And put a little more focus on it. I think that's really important.
I just want to voice my support for this and for doing it through a position as the legislative unit has presented. I just don't think we can expect the same, the same responsibilities or the same structure of how this is being handled now to produce a different outcome. We could work with the county executive team to tell them to tell DW to put more of an emphasis on it, but we know that that's probably not going to change. I don't think there's anyone that, you know, in buildings and grounds who's, you know, wondering what's next in terms of their day-to-day. I think you do need to actually give them more resources. I think this is a great way to do it. So I just wanted to voice some support for that.
Yeah, I didn't have the opportunity to come to close to the legislator on this, but I did discuss with him, and I of the opinion that we should do this, but it's that we don't necessarily need to do it now. So I'm, remove my name from the amendment here, since we don't have his permission to withdraw it. I think what Legislator Uchita said is correct, that we do need this, but one of the things we might consider doing is doing a study of what needs to be done to create this department instead of just bringing in the head of the department. So I'm sympathetic to those who would rather not do this at this time.
All in favor? Opposed? Motion defeated. Number 20 is withdrawn. 21.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second. Discussion. Favor?
Okay. Can I speak on this first? Just a second.
Sorry.
I'm very much in favor of this idea. I brought this up several times, actually, in sessions of how we can open up our boards and commissions to folks who might find it prohibitive in terms of, just simple things like they can't get there or they have a child care issue. So I really want us to try and figure this out this year. And I'm going to be a no on this right now because I think it needs more work, because I heard the discussions about making people expose their income, and I don't agree with that. I don't think that we should be asking questions like that. But I think there should be ways that we can make our boards and commissions more inclusive, as inclusive as possible. So I'm going to commit to working on that next year. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. I appreciate the Vice Chair's comments. Just to clarify, this amendment doesn't direct any income divulging in any way, and Legislator Nolan in that discussion had, I thought, proposed a great way to just create a box where you can check, who'd like to receive a stipend, yes or no, without any other question being asked.
Favor? Opposed? Number 22, can I have a question?
I'll move it.
Second? Discussion?
Again, Legislator Erner, thank you so much for this. Again, I agree with it in spirit. Do it, but I'm not sure that, again, this is the way. I had a concept of maybe this being a volunteer kind of position where people in the community are interested in serving in some way, and it's a great way to kind of get to know other community members. Just a little concerned about adding more positions, creating more positions. So, again, I'm committed to the idea and willing to work with you next year and figure out a way to make it work, but I don't think this is quite the right solution.
All those in favor? Opposed? Number 23. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion?
So, I know that 23 and let's jump ahead to 24, one or the other. I really do want to see what the outcome of the existing contract is. The initial reporting was underwhelming to me, but there was some information left out in terms of gaining a full picture. I think the time to look at this in earnest is really going to be after the final reporting, after a full year of the contractual service, where we get to see what were the outcomes like, and get a sense of if there were people that were turned away, and the sense of the need on that. So I'm going to be a no, but I do hope that the next legislature takes a hard look at the information that comes back at the end through and at the end of the contract that was funded through ARPA.
Sure, Chris.
Yeah, and also it's going to be a no on this, but again, I support it in spirit and would like to give our new housing staff and DSS a chance to engage and see if they can somehow alleviate some of these housing issues, and certainly they'll be able to refer to legal services and things like that, but legal options that are out there in the community. So I really want to give them a chance to see what they come up with.
Thanks. So we're all looking at the amended amendment, correct, for 23? Great. Yeah. So this is different from what I had before, which was directly to support my proposed office of Housing Council. This now would add an attorney to the county executive's proposed office, the homelessness and housing unit proposed for DSS. Bear with me here. I do want to thank those on the committee who previously supported exploring adding in-house legal services for this civil purpose. For those not quite there yet, thanks for your questions and consideration. So just to reiterate, this is not quite the same before. We were going to put this in public defender. This is going into social services. This is going to be for anyone now experiencing housing legal issues. The attorney could represent them directly or refer them out. It's one attorney who would be paid decently. The Social Services Department had requested in the executive budget two social welfare examiners. The county executive, rightly in my mind, instead said, let's create this Office of Housing and Homelessness. Now, this unit, we know, has no lawyer in it, so that limits them. There is no civil attorney working for the county, in fact, at all right now. We have almost 70 attorneys in this county among the departments of the public defender, the district attorney, the county attorney, even social services, which has 8 attorneys whose job is to defend essentially the department itself. This lawyer would handle litigating when conflicts of interest arise with our primary, if not our only contractor currently that we have for Legal Services of Hudson Valley. Legal Services of Hudson Valley has come and told us that we need to have a whole office, not just one attorney added, but I'll get more of that in a moment. Again, no income threshold for services. This is for folks at risk of losing their home for any reason, other conditions, other questions. I think it would be very convenient for the office that is being proposed by the county executive to have someone in-house that can actually do legal things directly. So the question has been raised by several legislators. Who are the underserved and unserved folks? What is the need? Do we know this? Do we have statistics about this? Now, we all know from our own experience dealing with our constituents, all the departments of human services know, all the departments in the criminal legal system know that there is an unmet need, but can we quantify it? So here's the work I've done since we last discussed this. I brought this to the Association of Town Supervisors and Mayors. I brought it back to the county executive's team. Legislative Council and His Honor Chris Ragucci has reported to me his conversation with fellow magistrates. I had a call just this morning with the regional 211 helpline, and they just sent us back some data, which I've had the clerk has forwarded to you in the middle of this meeting, about all the housing cases handled by this outside organization, Ulster County. We do have the report from Legal Services with numbers, and then shortly after we got a narrative description. It does not have a whole lot of information about unmet needs, however. Why is that? because if you aren't meeting the needs, then you don't necessarily even know who the people are. Again, we have to refer a little bit here to our own experience. I talked to the Commissioner of Social Services today, and I don't need to speak for him, but call up the Commissioner of Social Services and ask his opinion about whether we need an in-house attorney. I have a call scheduled with Legal Services and the administration on Friday. I have a team of volunteers who are calling and planning visits to the justice courts around this county to obtain information about what the need is that's not being met, but that's, of course, only going to tell us about cases that come to court. We all know about this need for legal representation for housing matters, that it exists and it is growing. So what better way to do the work and better understand the work to be done than to bring civil counsel in-house? I will leave you with this. Excuse me. Civil Rights Council says, if you cannot afford an attorney in this country, one will be appointed for you, unless you're losing your children or your home or your health care or any other civil matter. I think it's not a lot to ask to have for less than $200,000 next year to experiment, hopefully keep more people from losing their home in this county. Thank you.
Thank you. Shepard.
So I was fully prepared to vote no on this, and legislator Ernest gave me a lot to think about with the starting with the shift to moving it into the division. I haven't had the chance to speak to the executive or the executive's office because this is the first time I'm hearing it. But he's raised a lot of compelling points in terms of having an in-house counsel. The idea even ending on thinking of it as an experiment for 1 year in-house. One question I have immediately is the salary. We're going to be talking about attorney salaries shortly. I don't have an analysis of where this 110 is against existing attorneys. Do we have an analysis on?
Just to comment, Chair Bartels, the 110 salary that would be for this position would be $10,000 more than the supervising social services attorney in DSS that oversees the entire thing we have there.
Okay, so that's a concern to me. I think we need to think about the salary. I mean, our attorney salaries are challenging. It's a challenge to keep attorneys in the county right now. And I'm sure it's going to be high on the list of the salary study. But, yeah, I mean, we just talked about getting amendments on day of, but this is. I'm definitely going to need to have a discussion with the executive's office on this, but legislator Erner, you've given me a lot to think about on this one. Again, I was prepared to vote no. I want to hear what the rest of the committee says, but the way you're proposing it now is much more compelling to me.
I think legislator Erner made a lot of points, and I really want to thank you for all the work that you've done on this amendment. We are still in the same place as we were before in the sense of wanting to go further along in the contract and have some more information as to how those cases are developing. I also think, we will definitely tell the unit to keep solid track of the number of people that come to them and the nature of their requests, including how many of them need legal representation. We're in the county executive is in the same place as the chair in that this is something definitely worth looking at. I think as you get all the information that you're still gathering from legal services and all those other parties that you're speaking to, we can continue to look at this, and as we get a better sense of how many people are coming to the unit, what types of needs they have, how many of them need legal representation. I think we can keep looking at it closer to March or April, February, March or April, when that contract has had more time. point, because one of the other concerns is the salary. Just hearing about the salary right now for the first time, there would be, as the budget director mentioned, the person would make significantly more than the supervising attorney in the legal unit and also more than the deputy commissioners, so not wanting to exacerbate those existing challenges that we have with salaries throughout the county.
To go on, but just let's keep in mind that this is a last-minute amendment. I don't know about others, but I'm certainly not prepared to do this tonight either. So just go to Legislator Nolan next and Kay.
I would just say that I think that we still have the opportunity to look at use of funds for things like addiction prevention, and we may still need an in-house lawyer even if we're doing that, but I'd like to see this unit get stood up and start gathering that information of what it is that people need before we say that we need to provide everybody with legal services, especially since there's another way to do that. And so I think a possibility would be to do this as a consultant, but we already have a consultant. They're just in a different office. So I just feel like I would like to have the experiment of having a Department of Housing or Housing and Homelessness unit work and determine what is needed in it before we add this very high-level salaried position.
Thank you. I'll be brief. So we have a contract in place until April of this year, right, to provide legal services, right? And then at that point, if we deem it necessary, and this is through you, Chair, to the executive, does DSS Commissioner Iacocci have the ability to reassign attorneys within DSS if the need arises? To specialize in housing. I know the attorneys probably specialize in certain areas, but does he have the ability to assign an attorney there if the need arises within his current structure? Thank you.
I would want to talk to him first about that. I think technically he has the ability. I don't know about the bandwidth, though, and also the existing specialization of the attorneys in DSS legal may not lend themselves to this position necessarily. But I would discuss that with him.
So Legislator Erner just shared with me a summary of attorney salaries in this county. I think that to begin with, the salary needs to be closely considered. I think it is. If this were to move forward, it is too high given other existing positions. I'm going to say that we're going to have the opportunity to consider this on the 6th. Between now and then, I would challenge, I'm going to do my due diligence to reach out to the executive's office, but I would challenge the executive's office to think about how standing up this new division with an attorney in it, with a dedicated attorney in it, would change the power and functionality of that division. Not just as a direct outreach, individually providing legal advice, which is one aspect of what the person could do, but also a person with that particular expertise, as an attorney in that division, you're opening up my thinking, and I think we would do well between now and next week really to think about what that position might add to that division. I also am not prepared to vote yes on it tonight, not at that salary, so also I would ask that between now and the vote, because there will be the opportunity, even if it gets voted down, to consider it on the 6th, to do some legwork on that front too.
Yes, sir.
So I did talk with Commissioner Iacocci, and I spoke earlier. He did observe that the attorneys in social services right now are funded by non-county sources, basically have a certain mandate, so they can't do individual representation. They certainly can't do civil representation. They have to do their plaintiff and defendant actions within the, it's basically a department's internal function, more or less, is what he told me. I do want to say that I understand the point of view that this is a last-minute amendment. I did submit it before this meeting. I submitted it earlier in the week. But I understand it's an amendment of an amendment, so that is late in one sense looking at it. I welcome the discussion with Chair Bartels and any other legislators, the executive for that matter, about the salary. I will say I had our staff has suggested as a higher number because we hear from all the departments that have needs for attorneys that have difficulty in retaining them. I'm hearing from from that an attorney comes for 2 weeks and leaves. So maybe we need to be raising these all up as soon as possible and not really waiting, but I'm going to have that discussion certainly. And just as a reminder, and I thank you all for your consideration again, your thoughtful comments, the organization that we contract with is telling us we need to have attorneys in-house.
So you agree? Does she agree?
Yeah, I just am a little bit confused about salary, if this is a new position, and I think the point was well made to assess how much the need is, and it seems to me that it should be on a sort of per diem basis rather than a full salary, although I do want someone immediately, you know, to be sent people available to people who need this help, and I totally support it. But I also think that the point was well made to understand how great the need is and try to meet that need and not just have it on yourself.
Just a quick comment. I just wonder if there's some sort of written report from legal services recommending that we have in-house housing attorneys.
Fair.
I've asked them. They said that they will come and speak at a public hearing if we do schedule that. They haven't sent a comment to that effect yet. However, we have received support for that very thing from a likely additional contractor with our county, the Hudson Valley Justice Center, which recently opened a new office in Poughkeepsie that they said could serve the adjacent portions of Ulster County.
All right. Welcome to here. All those in favor? Opposed? Number 25. Sorry, 24.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? You did. 25.
I'll move it.
Second. I'll second. Second. Discussion. All those in favor? Opposed? Defeated. 26.
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor? Opposed? Defeated. 27.
I'll move it.
Second. Discussions?
I just want to be on the record saying I love this thing. I think I've been all over the place has to have this conversation, especially with the top electeds. I think we can get more, not less.
All those in favor? Opposed?
Thanks.
Motion. 28. No motion.
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Defeated? 29. No motion.
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Defeated?
Number 30.
No motion.
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Defeated? 31. No motion.
Motion.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Yeah.
Opposed? Defeated. 32. And motion. Motion. Second. Aim. Discussion. discussion.
I mean, does anybody have any further questions? I mean, I'm happy to.
I thought you were done. No, I'm still.
if anybody has any questions, we're happy to answer them. I think that, you know, my concerns about moving around hours, you know, stand for themselves. I mean, last thing, unless anybody's got any questions or further comments on it.
Zero. That's just management positions.
Yeah. No, there's one management, one, there's one management and one that's CSEA. The CSEA position is being increased in hours by the controller for budget. I want to leave the way it is from the previous year. So I'm not changing anything per se. I'm just amending it back to what it currently is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to commend my colleague, Legislator Ron, for putting together these five or six resolutions in his last month or so as a legislator. He should be commended for working hard to get up to the end.
Yeah, I saw, I think it was Clerk Natalie Helder's note about only discussing if there was new information, and Legislator Menard and Ron could ask me if I would put together a memo, which I did do, and I regrettably did not immediately start telling it to the Ways and Means Committee, but I did earlier today. And I want to note that two things that I think are important coming out of that memo. One is that the deputy clerk slash fiscal analyst and the deputy controller are at the same salary proposed as the deputy budget director and the deputy finance commissioner, yet they are being required to work 5 hours more per pay period. This is resulting in $3.69 less per hour for the women employees who both hold CPA certifications and have years of experience in county government. So I want to raise that to the committee's attention. I think that's a problem. And the second thing I want to note, that was, you know, the portion where we're trying to reduce the hours of the deputy controller. But with regard to raising the hours of the director of internal audit and control, I want people to be aware that our longtime, multi-decade senior auditor, Steve Ross, is going to be retiring, and Charles Dinsel, the DAC, oversees that position. We are going to see added work on all of the auditors because of the gap in service as we try to fill that position and train. And I anticipate, and I'm being completely honest with you, I will become, if Charles Dinsel does not go to 80 hours in this budget, I'm trying to be 100% transparent, I probably will be coming with an alternative work schedule. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. You know, first off, with all due respect, and you know how I feel about this, you know, salary positions are salary positions. You know, Deputy Clerk Feaster and Deputy Comptroller DeMarco are not receiving less salary than their contemporaries in the finance department. The hourly salary is different because of the number of hours that they work. I will tell you that I spoke to the clerk of the legislature several times on this. She cannot afford to have Deputy Clerk Feaster work less than 75 hours. Her work will not get done. One of my biggest concerns is that I believe you were the comptroller when that position was raised from 70 to 75 hours. That tells me that you needed five more hours out of that position. That position was raised in the last couple of years in the number of hours. And that was done, I believe, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, maybe I'm remembering something different, in order to increase the salary, because the salary of the position was increased at that point. Now, that would tell me that you needed more hours out of that position, or the comptroller at the time needed more hours out of that position. You know, when your salary, to me, your hourly, your number of hours a week, a month, a year is set by the department head, hopefully through the budget process like we're doing here, and reflects the amount of work, the amount of hours that you need out of that person, but it's a salaried position. You're not receiving overtime if you work more. But if you work more, you are receiving comp time. you know, some departments more than others. Some departments, you know, restrict the use of comp time or the accrual of comp time. But again, I don't agree with the argument that the hourly rate is somehow discriminatory towards one person or another. I think that, you know, I would be more in favor of requiring the deputy commissioners of finance to work 75 hours than decreasing the hours of the deputy comptroller. And if that's what this legislature wants to do, I'm fine with that. I don't agree with the parity conversation on hourly rate when you're salaried employees.
I tend to agree. And look, I'm on the record saying I think all management should just be 40 hours. It's different. The only thing about that argument I just heard was if these are positions that can't receive comp, then your argument holds. But if there is comp involved, then there is a difference. Why don't we move the finance and budget director to 75 and line them up? And to be honest, but why are they even making the same, to be honest? I think these are two men that have been here less than a year, and we have two CPAs here that seem like even elevated titles. So even if they're making the same, but the hours are different, and the young men who aren't CPAs can collect more in comp, there is a difference, isn't there? And this was one way I always bring our staff into it, where it doesn't seem, and I don't know why that is, but we're the ones that can do something about it. We've just recently kind of made it a little more fair for our staff, but it seems like the executive staff is always gets treated better than the legislative staff, and I think that's the argument the Comptroller was making over there to a point. But can we fix that in this budget cycle?
We could add men
that have been here a year with less of a title and less of an education be making more than these two women that have been here a long time.
They're not making more. It's flagrantly incorrect that they're making more. If you're looking at hourly, but they're making the same
comp time for those four positions, then I just shouldn't take more than a minute for it. Let's take a look at the comp time. They're making the same, but they're not hourly-wise, especially if you see comp after that. Then you're working more for the same amount.
But comp time's not financial compensation.
Let's not go back and forth. Let's finish your question, and then we'll...
First of all, I would like to pull the comp on those four positions. Let's see where those four positions are comp-wise. But why don't we fix the fact that, don't you agree that these two women should be making more than these two men?
My amendment isn't about making more or less. My amendment's specific to hours, and it leaves all the salaries the same, which without a deeper discussion, I'm not willing to be lowering salaries here.
And my perception was your amendment was a reaction to an attempt to fix what I'm talking about.
I don't believe it was an attempt to fix. I have my own opinions on what was coming down the pike next year, which I won't be here to deal with. If the number of hours is lowered, what I'm saying is I don't agree with playing these games with hours when you have salaried employees. If it makes it more palatable for Ways and Means and or the legislature to increase those two positions in finance to 75 hours, I'm fine with it.
I would appreciate it.
You know, but, I'd like to hear from other committee members, too, if there's a willingness to do that. That was one thing that I've been pondering the comptroller's memo since she wrote it to me. And I don't agree with the premise, but I understand how it could make people more comfortable if they were all at the same number of hours. One of the problems we have in the county is that through management, civil service, and everywhere, the hours are all over the place. There's no rhyme or reason. We've had chairs of the legislature back before this legislature made what I think was a really smart decision and move the staff underneath the clerk so we could take politics and stuff out of it and make it, you know, a more administrative office, nonpartisan administrative office. But, you know, before then, you'd have chair of the legislature moving hours around willy-nilly. We had a chair of the legislature, you know, since I've been here, who didn't allow anybody to accrue comp time and just said, you work as many hours as I say you work. You're on a salary. You know, and we had people working 85, 90 hours a week. You know, again, you're on a salary. To me, these offices have determined how many hours they need out of their employees. If we want to question them on why they need 70 hours when the comptroller's office needs 75, I can tell you our office needs 75. You know, and sometimes necessitates alternate work schedules to bring them up to 80. But again, you know, to the comptroller's point on the director of internal audit and control, if that position it has to do more work because of the departure of an auditor and a break and or a need for more expertise because you're bringing on somebody new and the onboarding process is causing problems, that seems like an awfully awesome place for a alternate work schedule. You know, alternate work schedules aren't always used when you have important times when you need staff time. They're used to increase salaries outside of the budget process because you have extra money in your personnel line. You know, I've seen that done in the executive's office. I've seen that done in the comptroller's office, all over the county. And that's one of the reasons why I'm really hesitant to lower hours, because it opens up the possibility of then using the alternate work schedule to raise somebody's salary.
Yes, I have a question about, my book's not right in front of me, but the comptroller's memo refers to deputy budget director at 70 hours. We're having a discussion about 70 versus 75. Is that to the exec, is that in the proposed budget? Is this one of the positions that is at 80? That in the proposed budget is at 70, and right now we're proposing to put back to 80, so that position will go to 80 and will no longer be at 70?
Yes.
With regard to the comptroller's office?
No, with regard to the deputy budget director, in the comptroller's memo it says 70 hours, 101, 421. When I look at the next resolution, it says deputy budget director, 70 hours, that's being deleted and put back to 8.
Sergeant, I don't have the memo in front of me, so.
Can somebody speak to the position of deputy budget director? How many hours?
That's what we're asking.
Yeah.
The budget put the deputy budget director and the budget director from 80 to 70.
Right.
My amendment, the next one, puts it back to 80.
Okay, so that handles that one.
Would actually make the deputy budget director lower paid than all of the contemporaries that are referenced.
That's what I'm pointing out. And then the deputy finance commissioner is at 70. Is that current budget?
70.
That's 70. So we're dealing with one position, deputy budget
if
director.
Comptroller also lists the deputy finance director as somebody who would then be making more money per hour than the two females.
Right, that's my point. That one position is the one we're talking about. The deputy budget director is going to get handled if your next resolution passes, which I think it will.
If we're going to move them all to 75, then I think we move them all to 75, and I'll make a motion to amend my next amendment to have the deputy budget director go to 75, because if we're gonna talk fairness for hourly rates, then we're gonna talk fairness for hourly rates for everybody. Again, I was putting hours back to where they were beforehand, whether it was 80 hours or 75 hours.
Yeah, I
think that this is a very foolish conversation to have.
I see the distinction in terms of comp time. It is a difference in terms of the benefit you get if you start accruing comp time at 70 hours versus 75 hours, and all the people we're talking about can accrue comp time. So I see a distinction there. The fact that one of these positions, one of the four we're talking about, is actually an 80-hour position, takes that position totally off the table. We have one position left that's at 70, but I don't really feel comfortable right now let's say, willy-nilly making changes and going, okay, let's just take that person and move them from 75 to 70. I mean, I would hope that that becomes a part of the salary study as well, because it is relevant. And I'm inclined to want to agree with the minority leader in terms of setting things back as they are in the person budget. That would be for both. Like the moving of hours
just
makes me uncomfortable.
Point of information, it would be, it's not the way it was in the budget. We're moving
we're
back
to
the yeah.
previous budget. I'm sorry. Yes.
That's all right. I just want to make that clear.
Yes. For the record, no, that's not the moving
right.
it back
correct.
To the previous. You're not making the changes proposed in this
with
budget.
No rate change.
No rate change.
With no rate change. I mean, I think one thing worthy, one point made by legislator Maloney that's worthy of talking about, which kind of goes to your underlying point about salaried employees, is in having management, fairly high-level management positions, not at 80 hours, maybe not advisable. That's honestly what we really should be talking about, ultimately. We're not going to do it just now at the last minute, but probably we should be closely looking at all management employees working 80 hours. I agree with the sentiment, and that should be discussed in the salary study and probably should be instituted when you're talking about supervisory roles. I don't know how you do it with less.
I just want to note that I went back to first 2018, the deputy controller has been at 75 hours my whole tenure here and for several years before. And I also just want to state for the record that the difference in hourly rate between the women and the men is that the men in these positions are earning $55.30 an hour and the women are earning $51.61 an hour.
Sure.
As
proposed, right? And then there would be the only other position would be the deputy commissioner of finance. I just want to make clear for the record, this is being videotaped, that while the hourly rate is different depending on how many hours you have, the amount of money being deposited into their bank accounts, I'd like to hear from the deputy counsel. She keeps shaking her head every time I say something, which I find a little rude, but I'd like to hear from her anyway.
I just want to point out that the comp time does actually result in more financial pay to those employees because they use comp time instead of vacation time and then subsequently cash out their vacation time, which results in them being paid their full salary plus the allowable vacation payout, which most of them do frequently. I don't utilize comp time on a regular basis as well. So, yeah, it's less than one day of comp time for this entire year.
To Leslie Maloney's point, that'd be an awesome thing for us to look at is the payouts in those positions on vacation time. Because comp time used instead of vacation time, and then vacation time is bought out for blah, blah, blah. Again, that's quite a few steps to determine if someone's making more money. But regardless of that, I will tell you this. To me, if the next legislature wants to pass a policy that all management employees work an 80 hour pay period, I'm fine with it. I'd be absolutely fine with that. That would make absolutely no. It would be no problem for me. It would eliminate these things from happening. It would also eliminate the frequent use of alternate work schedules to increase people's salaries. And then we wouldn't have to have these, hourly rate is lower conversations, which I think, again, are foolish.
Mr. Rock, when I saw first just that we don't act on these tonight and actually bring it to the floor, but as a collective, we look at them in a schedule that shows and then putting the hours back together so we can clearly see that everybody's on a level playing field. Because the general theme I'm hearing is we want to be equal and fair to everybody. I think we can do that, and I think we can do it this year. I don't think we have to wait. I don't want to wait till next year.
Are we only doing that with these with these four positions or five positions?
No, all years. The ones that you have brought up and others that were mentioned tonight.
Right, but I believe that the ones that were mentioned tonight are the deputy clerk of finance, the deputy comptroller, the deputy finance director, and the deputy budget director.
us. Yes, we look across the board.
And I'm saying I think that that's a more complicated conversation across the board, across the county workforce in managing confidential employees. I think that's more complicated than for right now, which is why I suggest a policy in the next year, which then can be implemented in next year's budget. I'm happy to not take any action on this tonight. And the next one, if that's what the committee desires, I would rather take action because I think that this is a pretty clear spot where I want to take a stand. But if everyone else doesn't or wants to hold off, I'm fine with that. We can talk to our finance staff and see if they can put something together, but I think that you're going to have a lot more department heads in here grieving their things on budget night if we do that.
Yes, sir.
I was just going to say that if we do wait, I mean, I would be for it. I guess there's a lot of management positions, so there's some maybe that you want to leave at 35 or 30 and all of a sudden they're working a whole other day. I don't know. But that is something that I'll be pushing to look into, and I think we probably need to take a couple of meetings just to go over that. I'd also like to look at comp in general, and I think we should probably add some positions to those positions that are barred from comp, because if you're making $107,000 a year and you're the deputy of a department, you probably shouldn't be able to collect comp too. You should probably look at that as a job. You may go a little over that 40 hours once in a while, and I think you should be willing to do that. So that's something that, whether you guys decide to deal with this right now with a couple of these positions, I definitely think right January and February, I'm going to be pushing to take some time to go over a couple of these different things and get it a little more uniform and a little more fair, get a little more work out of those people at the top. Chairman.
Yeah, I think right now it's not the time to do it. I think there'd be a lot of people with a lot to say if we just at this last minute made a radical change like that without discussion. But I think it's an absolutely worthy discussion, including looking at personnel manuals related to comp time and vacation buyout for management. All those things, they, you know, haven't been looked at by the legislature in a significant period of time, and probably it's a comprehensive look. We're in the midst of a salary study. We're going to get that back. So I think it's a worthy conversation, but I don't think it's something we can take on right now for all manager positions at this moment in time. I hope that Vanessa takes it off.
In favor.
Opposed.
All right. 33.
I'll move it.
Second. I thought there was a motion to take no action.
Motion, yes. Sarah, I'm sorry,
33, with the motion from Ron, second. Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 34, we have a motion.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 35, can I have a motion?
I'll move it for discussion.
So
it was brought to my attention by the county executive that there's two small discrepancies in the standardization of the confidential secretary. My understanding from her, and this is a question to the budget director, I think, my understanding from her was that these positions were already in excess of the agreed upon amount by the couple $100 and $1,200 or something like that, whatever the two numbers are, and that these weren't increases in the budget, and that the concern was that the standardization wasn't intended to reduce anybody's salary that they were already receiving. Would these be reductions of what they're already making from the previous year?
It would not. I went back and looked.
Okay.
Just to make sure, because I shared that same concern.
Yep. Yep.
In the case of the one position, it would, the county clerk asked for an additional amount.
Yep.
Beyond, so this would bring it back in line, but it'd still be a raise.
Okay.
And the other one related to, not to bring up the other topic, but the term of the work schedule that carried forward, so this, your amendment would fix that.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you. I appreciate the help.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 36. Motion.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 37. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 38. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second. Second. Discussion.
So, all right, we're talking about the Historical Society funding, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I feel like I need more information to vote on this. I was a little concerned that we weren't able to ascertain whether these historical societies were 501c3s or what their actual status was. And so that gave me some pause. And I was also really unclear about what the mechanism for funding would be. Would this be that we're just giving them grants, or is it going through something? Or I didn't quite understand how that funding would actually hit these organizations. So I was unclear about a lot of this.
I mean, those questions are some of the reason why I'm voting no. Additionally, you know, when Lister Stewart was mentioning the different historical societies, I'm pretty sure he didn't even mention the one that was in my town, which I believe is a 501c3. You know, again, I think that these historical societies have means to fund themselves. They have fundraising goals. They have fundraisers. They, you know, again, I've always been of the opinion very strongly that the county budget isn't here to fund our individual 501c3s, not-for-profits that we really like, that we think do a good job. I always say, if they're doing a good job, then let's find a way to raise them money. Let's find a way to get them private money. You know, but this is where, you know, government, I think, doesn't become or shouldn't become a list of member items, which I've always thought that these things were. You know, I opposed them when they were on my side of the aisle, too. There was one legislator, good friend of mine, who used to come with them every year, including one for Christmas gifts one year. It was the Operation Christmas Wish. You know, so those are the reasons I'm not supporting it. But, you know, some of them we might not be able to give money to, and then is it going to be a grant, or is it going to be reimbursable? If it's going to be a reimbursable amount of money, are they going to have the cash to lay out to do these things? And then what kind of reporting are we going to get? It's just too many questions.
All those in favor? Opposed? 39. Can I have a motion?
I'll move for discussion.
Second. Second. Next discussion. Favor?
Oh, I got a quick question. So I saw that sorry about that. I read, I think it was a press release today or yesterday, that the warming centers are open 24/7 now.
It's open 24/7 until further notice.
Okay. So that's already covered in the budget, right?
Yes.
So do you need additional funding to keep warming centers open longer?
This is an amendment put forth by Legislator Stewart to support municipal warming centers. The funding that we have in the budget currently supports the county-run warming centers in Kingston, and also motel and hotel stays for people who can't stay in a warming center, like families. So this would be a new expense on top of what we currently receive from the state.
So it would basically, how we distribute the money? Do you have any idea what its plan is? How we would have towns request it from the county to help them with this? Are you aware of anything? I haven't ever heard.
This hasn't been, I don't know that there's like a specific plan at this point as to how this would be distributed amongst the municipalities. I believe Legislator Stewart got a request from a municipality, and this was being responsive to that, but I don't know that. There's not like a program.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Sure. I was going to follow up on that comment. You know, I think that one of the concerns about having this money, depending on would it be given to every municipality to operate a warming center, then would the municipality have a requirement to do so? Because in order to operate a warming center, you have to have a staff. you can't just unlock the door to the town hall community room and say, come one, come all. Yeah, you're going to have staff there. You know, it's also important that these are occurring in areas where there are typically a larger percentage of homeless or in people in need of a warming center. You know, I talked to the county executive about it. The one place where we'd like to have one at the county front that we don't is in the Allendale area. You know, because that's one of the underserved areas for this. But the, you know, that's why it's, you know, that's why the one that we operate is in Kingston. I have concern about whether or not this would be enough money even to operate the warming centers. And then you're putting one more thing on probably the town supervisors. You know, as the chief executive to either staff the warming center with employees or themselves.
$8,000.
Exactly. I'm good.
Mr. Rock had a good business for an elbow team workout.
Excellent.
Well, that's good.
All right. Well, Ms. Sarah. Thanks. I was going to say, we got to figure this out better as county, not just the county government, just all the people of Ulster County. We need to figure out better how to have dispersed options for people to be able to stay in their communities. I don't know that this does that, but this is making us have this conversation, which we've had before in my time in office. I hope that we will continue to look at that. Thank you.
Both there. Both. 40. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. Favor. Both. Motion carried. 41. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor? Opposed? Council carried. 42. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion.
So, you know, I think that this is an important first step. I spoke with the sponsor and I spoke with the exec about this. You know, I expressed concern that there might be difficulty in hiring a person. Sponsor suggested that it might be easier than I think. And that would be great because I think this is the first step toward actually moving towards taking up some of this on in-house to save money. I mean, I share the concerns about the never-ending list of contractual services for used radios, even. That was our most recent used radios, which you could buy online for just a couple $100. We were spending 5 times that per radio on the contract. So I hope that this person gets hired quickly and that the next legislature sees real savings as a result of it. And I'm sure if that's not the case, then the next budget cycle will rethink it. But I hope it's the beginning of it.
Just real quick, so I understand, totally understand why there's a need there, but one of the things that's just jumping out at me is who pays for the parts, because electronics don't have a lot of moving parts. They can generally burn out, work, you know, get defective one way or another, right? So how are the parts paid for radio repair in the departmental budget? It's just something that jumped to my mind, because that's literally where the expense will be. Not the personnel to do it, but in the actual hardware to do the repair.
Yeah, so not to rehead everything we've discussed in the past, but I'll just quickly say that even if you just look at Chip Hartel's pointed it out, the cost that we're paying to lease some of these radios, you can literally buy two of every one and still save money having one sit on a shelf, and just when you have something go wrong, have a person who knows exactly which radio needs to be replaced, how to hook it back up, and then walk away, and we're still going to save ourselves money by doing this.
That's good. Thank you.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 43. Can I have a motion?
I'll move for discussion.
Second.
As one of the sponsors, I've spoken with the other.
Yes. In a second.
Oh, got it.
Second. Okay.
I've spoken with the other two sponsors, and we're going to withdraw this.
Okay. I'm good then.
Withdrawn. All right. Good. 44 has been withdrawn. 45.
I'll move it.
Second. Chris Wolf, discussion? Favor? Opposed?
Yeah.
46, do you have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second, discussion? Sarah.
So, I just want clarity. We're talking about the title says contractual, the temp agency contractual space, and my understanding was we can't do that through the union. Is that what's being proposed now? What is being proposed now? We still propose the temp agency?
This is number 46. I believe what is being proposed is a full-time position.
Yeah, I have some concerns about this, being with sponsors of the Crisis Stabilization Center resolution. I went down and saw the model that we were looking at, which was in Poughkeepsie, and I agree on so many levels that the entrance has to be done well, and it has to be a welcoming space for people to come into and a supportive space. But I'm not sure that a permanent staff person is the right way to go. For one reason is we're talking about a 24/7 facility, and you can't have a person work 24/7, so we would have to hire at least two people, maybe three people. But if we went with a contracted agency, we actually could staff it 24/7. We could have people there all the time. And I heard the discussion about we're in pilot phase with this a little bit, and so I think better understanding what the needs are and how they'll be met, it's going to be a little bit of a work in progress, and I think that would be a moment to say, oh, it's really clear we need three full-time staff to be there that man this staff this place the whole time. And so I'm not in favor of a full-time staff person, but I am in favor of a contractual temp person or people.
My understanding is we cannot do a contractual temp person. It would be a violation of the union contracts because it's a title position, which is why it switched. But our title on our resolution list was lagging. It is updated in the amendment itself. So we can't.
It's a short answer.
Yeah.
So my thought here is that we have a lot of moving pieces in this whole very well-funded endeavor, and there's a lot of offices that will be there. There'll be a lot of people around. Those people already have all their assignments, and we'll have the consultants who are going to be helping to do a whole bunch of other stuff. It just seemed to me to have one person who was identified as an Ulster County employee that we choose and that we hire to be a flexible, very helpful person can be helpful to all those departments who need to talk to each other and work things out, as well as being helpful to the public who walks in. And the public will walk in. And so it's just a small salary. It's a position that we're probably going to need, almost certainly going to need, no matter what happens from the first day onward. It might not be at the front door. We might do something else at the front door. But just to have a person who can be the point of contact to go from all the different departments to the executive back to the public, to agencies that are in that building, it just seems like this much stability in that is likely to make it succeed. I can't do anything other than tell you that my experience in medical settings is that sometimes it's the clerk or the typist secretary who is making an entire emergency room work. And I just have learned that. And so looking at this big thing happening, I thought, let's go ahead and put that in place. It's just an intuition, but it is based on experience that if no one who is on site is responsible, even to just be the one to get messages back to the funding agencies or the consultants, then you get lots of communication problems. And this person could help alleviate that, prevent that, I think.
The chair, just Sanjay. I just am not understanding the coverage. Emergencies don't happen between 9 and 5, Monday through Friday. So how do you propose that we're covering the space during the hours that there's probably going to be a lot more emergency situations happening?
Yeah, that's fair, and we could have put in for free. But I think that the problem with having, you know, the problem is trying to alleviate communication. And yes, there can be communication problems at night, but there'll be somebody who can receive that report in the morning and a desk to go to. So it, you make a case for having three people, but we don't, you know, they're your arguments that we don't know exactly what's going to be needed. So it's a compromise in terms of just doing enough, but not trying to lock something in place that we later decide we don't need. Or maybe we decide we need somebody else at night. But it's a fair point.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I remember this discussion from before, and can the county executives team remind us, if not this, who would fulfill a role in this, and who would fulfill this role?
Yes, we got some more clarity on this when we visited the space last week. So the plan for the first floor is that staff with the agency that we're contracting will actually be at the front door. So in terms of the 24/7, they'll be dedicating staff to that. The request from the department for this position is actually for this person to be in the fourth floor. To be their receptionist, because to serve kind of the function that I think you were just describing, Leslie and Nolan, to be like a receptionist to direct people to whatever service they're looking for in the building, that's more what they're requesting. As was mentioned, we asked them if they could fulfill this role through temporary staff, because we're trying to be mindful about adding headcount. We looked at that option, but it's not feasible because of this is an existing union contract. Currently, to answer Legislator Ernest's question, currently what's happening is that everybody in the department is basically trying to fill that role, and that's how they're handling it right now. But the issue is also that they have a vacancy in their administrative position. So when they fill that position, that person could help, but what the department will say is that currently that position has a very high workload in that they're managing contracts, they're handling contracts. So that's why they're asking specifically for a receptionist. So again, I just wanted to clarify that this would be for the fourth floor, for the mental health department, and that there would be other staff at the front door.
I appreciate where the sponsors are coming from here. I have not been over to the facility yet, so I don't have a feel yet, but if it's anything like DSS, this position is needed, something I've talked to Phil about. We need a floor person over there with 80 people a day, and that is a 9-to-5-er. Whether this space ends up needing something similar, but DSS needs this position over there during the day. It would be a great help, I think. If we just let somebody go, it would be perfect for it. But as far as this goes, I think you probably will, but to Pete's point, waiting to see and feel whether there's a firm that we can contract with to provide 24-hour help the way that you're describing, but we're probably going to need somebody over there that's going to do this kind of thing, and I think we're going to need probably beyond just the receptionist kind of helping people in person on the floor. But I'm not opposed to hiring one person now and seeing where it goes. We're going to need somebody, and if it doesn't work out there, we can send over to DSS. We honestly need this position right now at DSS.
Mr. No.
Yeah. I would still be willing to bring this amendment for the fourth floor. But staffing will be through the consultants 24/7, so at the front door. So I think that is being taken care of in terms of having somebody available.
All those in favor?
Opposed?
In favor? Back and forth on it, but I think.
Sure.
We've invested a lot in this space. We've invested a lot of money, energy, a lot of desire and hope for what it can be. So I think that we should invest a little bit more money into it and try and help it along. If we decide ultimately this is not the right move, then we can move that person or switch things around. But I think let's give it the best shot we can get.
Okay. So I still am not clear on whether or not there are CSCA issues related to hiring a contractor to do that. So we're not hiring
a contractor. We're not hiring a contractor anymore.
It's full time closing night. So now you're going back to full time.
Okay.
I'd always intended it a full time employee.
That's just, you know, since we're going to keep discussion going after calling for the vote, I might as well add my 2 cents. I respect the point of view that Legislator Criswell brings forward, but to me, you want to know you need a position before you hire a position. And it's a very concerning idea to me to say, well, we can hire this person, and then we don't need them, we'll just move them someplace else. I mean, the staff count in the budget for the county this year is already up quite a few positions. I have concern about adding more to our body count with employees when we don't even know that we need it.
Yeah. All right. Sure.
Yeah, so... You know, I'm on the fence as well. Minority Leader makes a compelling argument, although I'm inclined to think that we're likely going to need someone. So really the question is for the executive staff, the executive side of the house, of how realistic is it, do you think, that we could get by without a person there? I mean, and... Given that, it's almost like, on some level, it's academic because I feel like if legislator Nolan's concerns are realized, which they are likely to be, you'll be coming asking for a position, which I have faith in the executive side of the house that that's what you'll do. So that may be the time to do it rather than us anticipating without the executive request. But I guess it's a question for you all. How likely do you think you're going to be needed? And how do you want to handle it since you didn't put it in the executive request?
It being a new space, we don't know right now, and especially because they have a vacancy for an administrative assistant, that's part of the reason why there is such a gap right now. So when they fill that position, we'll have a better idea if that person is able to manage the workload of being a front-facing receptionist as well as work everything in D2 on contracts. So that was our rationale for not approving it. But I, you know, having visited the space, there is not currently somebody planned to be in the receptionist spot. It's on the fourth floor. Again, it's not at the front door. On the fourth floor of the department. So in terms of people walking into the building and trying to figure out what services, where the services are that they need, that would be basically a shared responsibility between the staff of the mental health department as it's currently funded.
So I'm willing to essentially to vote this down, potentially, given that it's an operational analysis, but I also really respect Legislator Nolan's point that from their experience, this is going to be a necessary position. And I have a hard time imagining that once we're up and running, that we're not going to need somebody in that position. And so, I mean, my experience of this executive is is not that hubris will keep you from asking later, but I would say that, to echo Vice Chair Griswold's point, I think we all really want to see this space succeed in its intended use, and that's going to require a front-facing person. It really is. And so I'm okay voting no to the amendment, but that would be with the understanding that you're going to really analyze the space, really analyze the need, fill the vacant position, and then probably come back at the appropriate point and should you need it, ask for another person. That's kind of where I'm at, and it's only because we're hearing from the operational side of the house that we're not really ready for it yet, but I think it is just a question of yet. I do.
Yeah, I mean, I really appreciate the openness that you're expressing to revisiting this if it turns out to be necessary. I think that's really all that we're at.
That's it, not us.
Yeah,
sorry, in theory, that we were expressing, because I think definitely if we saw after the department has moved in there and after the center is open and the services are in full swing, if this was a critical need that actually prevented the center from being successful as we all envision and want it to be, then we would certainly put it for a new position.
All right. Call me out again. All those in favor?
So in favor?
In favor.
I am. How about the green?
Two.
I'm
going to
vote yes.
I'm going to be opposed.
Yeah. Okay. Hold on. Students again for the fifth time.
How about a long roll?
Oh, yeah. Let's do that. Let's figure wrong.
Roberts.
No. Mr. Roberts.
I want the greener.
See, that means yes.
Mr. Kano.
I'm going to be a no in hoping that the administration addresses it if the need arises, considering that it's not staffed fully yet.
Chair Martell. That's a pass. Let's say Criswell.
I'm going to be a yes.
Chair Martell. I'm a no. Chair Martell.
Yeah. I guess my vote doesn't matter. So I'm going to be a yes. Knowing that my vote doesn't matter right now, but actually registering that I really do believe this is going to be a necessary position. I just don't see. I hear the legislator Nolan's point. I don't see how it's going to work without front facing staff.
Okay. Motion. 47. I motion. I'll move it.
I'll second. Sir, any discussion on this one? Separation.
Yeah. Separation.
That's in more. This, I remember, it was a good conversation, and I think there was almost support for it, if I recall. This was just a tracking mechanism, right, more or less?
So that's what this is sold as, is just a tracking. Again, I just want to have before tonight or by next week, confirmation that all this is strictly an accounting function and has no operational impact whatsoever.
I just said, the handler speaks to it longer. In your opinion, would this just be a tracking mechanism or...
Well, it's more of actually the mechanic's desk office, because I want to make sure that there's no union implications here.
Well, I didn't think there would be any.
Thank you.
Nothing to bring up.
It would primarily be a new payroll division, a new division that would be created for Bridge. And that would create lines as far as lines for materials or commodities or overtime pay, summer and winter, uniform allowance, et cetera. So it would require duplication of many of the lines that are currently used by the Bridge crew that live in the greater Bridge and Highway division. So it would create some
information in the city's budget and to maintain those lines. It was my impression that part of the desire for this had to do with being able to track dollars for projects, and by creating this division, although the personnel line themselves would be divided into a new division for just bridges, it would not necessarily provide a mechanism to track the hours for bridge projects versus other projects. That's tracked separately through the accounting that's done for particular road projects from particular projects, which already exists. So I'm not sure, it's unclear to me that this would actually, from an administrative standpoint, reach the goals that I think were expressed during the prior ways and means meeting on this.
Sir, it's not my resolution. I was learning last week. None of this was said during that and described in any way that way. It was described completely opposite by anyone that talked about it. It's not my resolution. I don't know as much about it, but I'm confused at what I'm hearing tonight compared to what I just heard last week. And I think it was a 20 to 25 minute conversation, and it didn't sound anything like this.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm just looking for clarity. I mean, I've watched the meeting, but when I look at the amendment, is it just proposing these X's? It's proposing a new division. It's canceling out everyone from 511 with these account numbers, putting them 511 new account numbers, but in a new division. Is that? I mean.
Like all I can tell you is the intent behind it, as I understood, was just to change the account number in our financial system so as to when a position from the bridge crew, a bridge worker, is used to flag for paving with a highway, that we know and is able to be tracked. When these questions were asked, the answers we got had me feeling as though it was fairly simple. It was the only change within our account number, and that this would then be trackable and reports could be run. So I don't know how that's not true now.
And if I may, then, just to ask, are we saying that our account number being CD5110, we're at the XXXX, that would get four new numbers that aren't 5110, they'd get four different numbers, 7329, 1300. And so because they would have a new account number, that 7239 section, now we know that that person was working flagging versus
working with highway was the other.
How would you know that?
But yes, can someone explain that to me?
This is something that's already done with the snowplow. So some of the positions that are included in this are partially budgeted for under snow. So this is not a new concept. So it is like tracking the duties that the person is doing and then having it reported in the ledger depending on which duties they're doing.
So if you were working in budget.
Wait, I'm trying to wrap my head around. If an MEO person here, description MEO, with their PO number under this account, now is flagging instead of whatever else they were doing, how do we know they're flagging based on just the difference in the account number? That's what's confusing.
It's a department, not the specific job.
Yeah, so whether they did it as part of the bridge crew or they did it as part of the roads crew. It's not what they did, it's what department they did it for. Because we separate out from an academic point the two departments.
Okay.
So if a bridge person who, let's use the example I think I was used last time, which is the welder, if he all of a sudden is brought onto the roads curve for the day, because it's a bridge department welder, but they need him to flag for roads, it wouldn't show that he was the flagger. It would just show that his hours for that period in the ledger would show that his hours were used in roads, not in bridge. Alright, let's say that was next.
Yeah, so I did raise the concerns similar to what the deputy executive Lavalle's at the Ways and Means meeting. And I think that what we're seeing here just tonight is there's transaction costs with making this kind of change. And I think that there's also the possibility for unintended consequences. Because we do write these people into different grants that are state and federal grants that are quite complicated. So I think that this, it maybe if you want to know if a bridge person is doing flagging, we could ask the department to track that, and they could give us that information just straight up without doing any of this. And I'm not sure if you do this that you'll even answer that question. So I think it hasn't, the kinks haven't been worked out. Maybe this could be done in some
way. In trouble here.
Yeah,
legislator Allen is right next to me.
I think maybe if there would somebody wanted to do a little shadow of this for a month or two or 6 weeks and see if it started giving us some good information, then we make the change and put it into the system. But to change everything around like this without really understanding the implications of it, I think is potential to cause much more effort and work than you're going to get any value out of it.
Yeah, I just had a quick question about the demarcation of roads work and bridges work. And do the two ever meld? You know, so then who makes the decision of, well, I'm going to call this a road project, or I'm going to call this a bridge project? You know, not to be concerned about that.
Well, they're paving a bridge.
Couldn't
help myself.
Just to come back to the conversation regarding the split versus the snow and the roads and bridges, the snow removal piece, just from the for the committee's understanding as far as how we approach that, the once we get to a certain time of year, right around generally middle of November, early December, those individuals that are in roads and bridges in 5110 are all assigned to snow removal work. Their salaries then are all charged to snow removal. There is not an administrative process where we're looking at saying, okay, this road person was doing snow work and therefore we're charging over snow. It's a estimation that as of a certain point of time that these individuals are now doing snow removal work and not road and bridges, paving, and other type work.
Can I ask for clarity on that question?
So just, through the chair, just that, are you saying that you, regardless of whether or not there's snow, they just get moved over to snow? Like if we have a winter where there's not one day of snow, everybody gets moved to snow removal?
That is correct.
But they do other work, but they're doing other work when it's not snowing. It's kind of like priority. The Parks and Rec Department that takes care of a fuel.
All right.
So we'll move to the ice arena.
That's a bigger issue, I think, to address for you. Let's say Rob.
I'm good.
Clerk Easter, if you could address the comments earlier from Deputy Secretary Lavalle.
So with regards to the moving of other supplies and contractual expenses, it doesn't cause a duplication of those values. These are just payroll entries. So it is within the purview of the county executive to transfer the funds between the two divisions, but it would not cause them to be duplicated or increased.
Thank you. Thank
you. Through the chair to our clerk, do you think this would offer us a better accounting of how money is allocated within that department? Or is it just kind of just like shuffling stuff around for no apparent reason? I'm trying to get to why we would want to do this, you know, get a rationale and make it make sense to me. And right now it's just not clicking. I'm sorry.
I think that there's a way to do it for information purposes and also for like grant reimbursement purposes to do it in a way that is effective and informational, particularly as it comes to grant reimbursement and tracking of like particular jobs.
Pretty strict with that.
Because this amendment does relate to several others, Public Works also, we would be in that aim to provide information. I think it would be very appropriate at the Public Works and Capital Projects meeting to do a quarterly update that looks at both the staffing and the projects that are currently underway by the Bridge Crew. If there is interest in what's being performed, can we have two effective crews out? What's the work plan for that season? And to that end, we would be fairly supportive of providing that information at least a quarterly basis to the division.
Chair Perkins?
I guess it was a question for our financial analyst. So when you say there's a way for doing this for informational, are you saying that this is the way to do it for informational?
This will provide information regarding the broad tasks. So the transfer between like how much your people are working on a particular like overarching bridges or roads, this will show you, and any like budgetary amendments that take place throughout the year to meet those needs. But this doesn't solve the issue of or yeah, I don't mean to be recorded to you, but it wouldn't result in the recording to specific projects.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that's, to me, that's the big thing. The analysis of the staffing to specific projects more than the overarching, especially hearing, you know, which I guess I knew, but it's a little befuddling that we've got a whole division that's on snow when it may not snow at all. So how accurate is any of this, right? So it's like if we've got 20 people working on snow in theory and there's no snow, they're not actually working on snow. So I'm just not sure that this is going to achieve what we need, but I also feel like we do need more information and we do need for accounting, and there should be very specific tracking to projects, and these issues that were raised of people working from the so-called bridge division now working as a flagger. It's like there may be a need for that, but we should understand the need of why, and most importantly, whether or not the bridge crews are working to their max capacity. But all of this is confusing to me.
Yeah, I was actually previously going to support this 100%, but the what was brought up before about snow removals, now it's kind of really scared. That's what we're doing. Yeah, that's why I said we need to take up more conversation another time, because that's scary, that's what we're doing. So I'm actually not going to support this now. And I think, I mean, there's apps that do this for you. You can do jobs like, apps that you can, if you're doing, especially for grant purposes, if you have to assign your time to certain projects, this project management software for that very reason. We could easily do that. All right. All those in favor? Opposed? All right. 48. Motion?
I'll move for
second. Excellent. Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Needed. 49. Can I have a motion?
I'll move.
Second.
I'll second.
Discussion?
My understanding on this one is that there are multiple open positions.
Nine. That was last meeting that we had.
So I don't think this will have the desired effect, but I'm not going to support it.
We need people at the 911 center, but this isn't going to solve the problem. It's going to create more vacancies.
They're open after last meeting, I guess.
They hired provisionally, and then there was a test. And I believe that the individuals that hired provisionally passed the test, but
then several of them had left for other jobs, including, like I mentioned last meeting, Cecil Hudson. And then they just hired provisionally again, and there's going to be another test coming up. It's again, Cecil Hudson comes in looking for dispatchers, hires experienced dispatchers that we've trained for $10,000 more. It's not just Cecil Hudson, but they're the biggest defender, I think.
Is this an additional position?
Good example. I believe that the county executive's office intends to work on this in the next year. So.
That's all right. It's about the money, right? Voted down an increase that could have filled that.
I got to respond to that. With all due respect, Webster Earner, these are collectively bargaining positions, and I have a real issue with operating outside of collective bargaining. I hope that Howie would stay with me. that's where it should be handled, is in the collective bargaining and contract negotiations that the county executive enters into. And, I'll put on record here, as someone who's leaving, for a different position in January, it's my hope that the county executive addresses some of the inequities here as they did in the public works department.
All those in favor? Opposed? Number 50, can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed?
There it is. I want to thank the sponsor for putting this together, so I think it's important.
52, can I have a motion?
I'll second.
Discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Motion defeated. All right. Mr. Ross, do you want to record your votes on 10, 11, 13, 14, and 15?
Yes.
That's how.
Yeah, bye.
You need to make an account.
10, yes. 11, no. 13, no. 14, yes. 15, yes.
So, motion.
Is there any opposition to the technical amendments?
Yeah, I was going to move the technical.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. Yeah. Motion to adopt the amendments. Amendments, I'm sorry. 682 amendments.
I'll move it.
Second.
Third.
All in favor?
683, right?
682. That's all the amendments.
Got it.
Okay.
Now,
on to 683.
I'll move 683.
Second.
I'll second.
Okay.
I'll move to block the technical, but there's no objection. 1, 2, and 3.
Big capital
plan. I'll second that.
No, just 1, 2, and 3.
Motion second. Favors?
Aye.
Number 4. That motion.
Did you just move the block? Now we have.
Oh,
now we
have. Yeah. Okay.
I'll move it.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 4. That motion.
I'll move it.
Second. There we
go. So, I know the intent was to remove this because it's been in the books for some time without action being taken on it. I spoke with the executive about it. I oppose removing it because I actually support the program and I believe that this executive does as well, so I want to give a chance for there to actually be movement on this program.
Yeah, similarly, I appreciate the intent of holding space for this, but I really would like to see goals added to these projects, at least some sort of general outline of what is proposed, and I'd like to see that sooner rather than later.
Thanks. I'm opposed, for the most part, to removing capital projects from the capital plan in general, because having them in the capital plan doesn't tie us to anything. It doesn't require that we spend any money. This is just, you know, a wish list, a goal list, our capital plan, and then we establish the capital projects by resolution and fund them by resolution. I think that this allows us to apply for grants. I think it allows us to explore other funding possibilities, and then that will be where this gets prioritized. To me, this is a long list of priorities, and then, you know, it's prioritized through funding sources, through need at the time. You know, things may sit in the capital plan for 10 years, but then something might come along that causes us to move on. And I don't know that there's a problem with things sitting in the capital plan.
Yeah, and I would say that at the point that if and when this does get moved forward, I hope that it's moved forward with not a single proposal, but a programmatic proposal for something equitable, not just one. Here we are with this request for open space or parks or recreation, but here we are with this proposal to go out for a request on something equitable.
Okay. Any other
those in favor? Edith, number 5, can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second? Discussion? Number 5.
So, I received today comments on this specific amendment from Deputy Executive LaValle, but I'd like to give the floor to Deputy Executive LaValle because I really need to understand the concerns that the Executive's office has on this, which is mine and legislator.
And it's my understanding that this has to do with the proposed amendment is specifically speaking to not using the kind of category of the group program in the capital program, but having specific bridge-specific projects in the program. I just want to make sure that I'm understanding.
Yeah, just specific to the bridge. Your memo to me talked about bridge flag response and all the rest. This is specific to bridge superstructure repairs.
So there are, in the capital program, there are bridge-specific projects for larger bridge projects. This particular capital in the past has been used for smaller bridges where there's an effort to go out for the engineering and design work on several bridges that we bundle together as a means of doing that more cost effectively. So that's what this particular one is used for. The backup does mention two capital projects. Two bridge projects that have been in that capital, which are Rosendale and West Mills. The Rosendale Bridge, although it started smaller in scope, has significantly grown as far as its total cost for construction, including inspection services for that bridge. It is at a point where we would be comfortable putting in a resolution that would pull that out as a separate capital, but maintain that less specific program for bridge capital in order to, again, take smaller bridges, bundle them, have some efficiency in the design process for those bridges.
So I think the intent, I'm just speaking for myself, my intent, my concern is that, so we have this number, you know, these sort of general outlays, like these recurring bridge superstructure repairs, bridge substructure repairs, et cetera, et cetera. And I feel like we should be at the point with our capital program where rather than seeing a general line with $2 million or $1 million or $4 million, whatever the number is, we should right now, at this moment in time, be having a conversation about which bridges you're planning on undertaking. And there should be capitals proposed in the capital plan for those bridges. It may be that you change your mind. It may be that something comes up between now and us voting specifically on the capital. But the idea that we're just generally talking about bridges is a problem.
So we do keep records of documents out for bridges and projects. So again, there are the ones that are larger that are kind of slotted into their own capitals, and then there are capitals like this that are meant to deal with the smaller bridges and smaller projects as they're evolving, and also, again, lumping them together so that engineering design services, there could be a kind of a savings there as far as time and money. However, going back to the quarterly reporting that we would like to prepare for the Public Works Committee, I think this is very much the type of information that we have that we would like to share with that committee, which includes the bigger picture of the list with the names of the bridges that you may not see directly in the Capitol right now.
If I may just for a moment. So you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that where we see in this capital names of bridge projects, the ones you're talking about, it's a retrospective look. It's in this project because we voted on something with that name. Like there's nothing in this plan that has a prospective look with a name. Like I can't look in this plan right now and know what named bridges you're planning on doing. Well, they're named bridges, but they're ones we started. We already spent money.
So I believe there are named bridges. I was just looking at it. I believe there are named bridges where there hasn't been any design spent on that we're bringing into the queue there. So we're just double checking on that because I think that's the rate. There are named
Harley Mount Bridge, I guess.
But again, there's a capital project for bridge flags. So these are DOT flags, a yellow flag or red flag that we make. Again, it's about having the placeholder there, but then being able to react quickly to those situations where we have to do something with a bridge that has a condition flag for it. And again, there can be a storm. A large storm is going to change priorities a lot within looking at the triage list for which bridges need to get done when. So again, that information is in the background, and we would love to share more of that ongoing with the committee, but I'm not sure that would be the best use of creating separate projects in the Capitol.
Yeah, and again, sorry, I just started back and forth. But again, because I'm not going to be here, I almost would refer to my colleagues who are. But the problem that I see, and I just did a fast look, is the only bridge that I see without money expended, and again, it's on a fast look right now, is Hurley Mountain Road Bridge replacement. But when no money's been expended, but we know we were awarded $5 million in bridge funding, and that's why it's in here. So I can't look at our own capital plan and know what bridges are next in queue. But I should, as a legislator, be able to look at this capital plan and not know that you're going to do bridges, not know that you're going to be addressing our bridges. I should be able to look at this plan and know which ones are next in the queue. To the point of Minority Leader Rock, we're not obliged simply because it's in the plan to do it, but we should know, based on the plan, what's coming up, what's expected. And instead, the bridges are an ongoing program like the flag, which is they're really different undertakings. That's the flag program, I think, is a good program. It only started a few years ago, I want to say, and I believe it's been successful. But this idea that just it's an ongoing bridge program versus what are the bridges we have our own in-house team or we're going out to bid on, what are the most urgent, the legislature should have more transparency in that. And I'm not sure what the downside is in creating specific capital. I mean, we created capital projects for ARPA that weren't capital at all just to create, you know, placeholders, essentially. So, again, I'm just, this may not be the best way to do this, but there needs to be way more clarity and transparency with the legislature on what the plan is. That's what this is. This is a plan. So, like, where's the plan? Where can I look in this plan to know what we're planning on doing? I can't right now, unless we've already started it. Or
that's the wrong.
Thanks. I mean, perhaps, and this is just a suggestion to the executive's office on a way that you could address this without creating all these individual capital projects, that you could add to the capital plan in this section an addendum or an appendix with the TIP, what we have going on in the TIP. Maybe that's a way you can handle it that doesn't overwhelm you with capital projects.
I think that's a very good suggestion, and I think that's what I was intending on the type of information that would be provided, like on a quarterly basis, to the committee, so that they can see there's been a storm, there's something going on. That's where the priorities are shifting, where maybe the scope of one bridge shifts versus another one. It's just there is a plan, just making that more apparent in the capital program without creating dozens and dozens of individual projects with numbers associated with them, which may, you know, move in ways that we're not at 5 or 6 years out intending.
Yeah, thank you. So we have a list of red flag bridges. We're not repairing all of them every single year, is that correct? Two, all right, so red and yellow. Sorry. So I think to the chair's point is we have a list of priority bridges that should be something that we can refer to as legislators and say, this was a priority last year, where is it next year, the next capital improvement plan. So I agree with the chair that we should have that at our disposal. What are we doing? And then to your point, you had mentioned a couple times about savings on smaller projects that arise outside the capital plan that you would use capital plan money to, you know, you use a storm as an example, and I agree with that. But how do you, where's the savings in there? That's the part I don't get. If you could have multiple projects using one capital plan for that.
It is in putting out RFP for design services of similar type bridges, where you get a consulting engineer to come on, hire them to do engineering for whatever type of repair is needed for those bridges. So it's a savings of like a utility of scale.
So you would lump the similar types of bridges.
Yeah.
I'm not an engineer, I don't know that part of it, but I'm assuming there's certain types of bridges that are common throughout the county, and you would be able to, some of those are on that list, and then use that engineer to determine, you know, the best course of action for each of those bridges, and because they're the same type of bridge, it would be cost effective to do it that way.
Yes.
Okay. So, as part of what my concerns can be addressed by Mr. Ron's suggestion, the one part that can't be, which is why I actually like this a lot, is we don't even know, and this is from a financial standpoint, we don't know if some of the project is creeping in cost because we can't see it. We just see a large, small sum, and we won't know until you decide,
it goes over.
The executive office decides that now it becomes some separate project. Until that point, we won't know. We won't know how something is progressing, both from a timeline standpoint, but also from a fiscal standpoint. We just don't know that. And while you can give us reports
I will speak for myself, and I'm sure not speaking alone. We have a lot of things being thrown at us. Unless we have to act onto it, we're probably not looking at it as carefully as something that we actually end up going on to. So for me, there would be no project that could come up, even with a storm, that you would act on tomorrow. It would take a few months to determine what happened, like for what forward is put on our feet. In that time, we could make an amendment into the budget, to the capital plan. There's no reason why we could not move money around.
In our internal discussions about this, we were really trying to balance transparency and wanting to have an effective way to show you that there is a five-year plan where we are looking at changes in our estimations of cost of engineering and of the construction and also of the needs over time for these bridges. So that's on one hand, making sure that information is accessible to you so you can see that over the longer term. But also with a concern about creating too many separate capitals in the program where it could be interpreted as noise or as a wish list or as some of the other criticisms of the capital plan. And that's what's
trying to say. Sir, your jacket.
Oh, I was going to ask a question.
Yeah.
So that's what we were discussing internally, is what would be the best way to provide that information so that, you know, it's transparent, it's clear. You can see what we're saying as far as what the need is. So like the TIP, where we have a big long spreadsheet of all the bridges and position and kind of estimation of cost and time frame, along with costs and where we think those are going, but not creating a needed noise, I want to say, in the capital document. And I know that there's been some sensitivity about the number of projects that this wish list are really getting them done. So trying to find the right time.
Yeah, I mean, I think what sparked this for me, just, and I'm going to, in the DPW bridge program page on 223, you know, it gives the narrative, the description, what's been done in 2022 and 2023, respectively, and then it says, in 2024 and beyond, there will be approximately 4 bridges replaced each year. A list of bridges to be replaced in 2024 will be provided when the Department of Public Works requests the capital project to be established. It's kind of a crazy sentence to put in a five-year capital plan to a legislature saying, we'll get back to you. It's almost 2024 now. It's saying, we'll get back to you with a list when we establish it. It's sort of implying that there isn't right now some list, which there is. Yes, that's the point. There is. So I think what I was saying, I know what I was saying is, if there is a list, at the very least, we should have that list. And it should be a part of this. It can change. Right? This one that I just read from, for 2024, it's $950,000 in-house work. I get it. And I get your point. Respectfully, I really do, that what I'm proposing, which I didn't see at that time, could actually make things really difficult because now you've got 4 separate proposals and they may or may not move. But what I'm also saying very, very seriously and clearly is we need to start actually having that in this plan. We need to know, and we need to all understand, which we do. I've been here a long time, but even people who haven't been here a long time understand that what's in this may totally change, right? It may change due to a storm, it may change due to something else, but when I'm voting on this, I don't want to, at the very last month of 2023, be told, 2024 plan is forthcoming and we'll tell you when we have it, when I know you already have it. That's my point. You already have it. So I'd like it in here at the very least.
Opinion that it should also be provided to the Capital Projects Committee once a quarter, so there could be a discussion of further out, not just with the resolutions they're seeing for the projects that are moving now, but they have a better look on the horizon of how that landscape may be changing and what the dollar values are there.
Yeah, and probably a monthly update. With, you know, the quarterly, but then the monthly update, at least a monthly discussion. I mean, this is something that the Director of Planning has talked about regularly, that we get so bogged down in resolutions, right, that we're not actually even having a planning discussion. But that's a two-way problem, right? It's a function also of being kept in the dark on some level. I'm not talking about this administration or any administration in particular, but just this back and forth. There's so much work that we have to do on the regular, just getting through the nitty-gritty of a 100-page or a 500 or a 1,000-page package. And I don't mean budget. I mean monthly wage needs. But this capital, I mean, if it ends up that we don't move forward with this amendment, this capital should be amended to include those four names. Even to say it is anticipated that these four bridges will be undertaken in this coming year. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. If it's changed, it's changed. It's the legislature is going to move with whatever changes those circumstances. But to put in a capital, we'll get back to you next year in a five-year plan, is problematic, which is why I said, well, why don't you just tell me what those four bridges are? Essentially, that's what I was saying. But my conversations with you elucidated that it could actually be problematic to now break out and create four capital, especially when we're talking about $1 million. I get it. That's probably, you know, I don't know, it's the wrong tool, but we're getting at what we need here, I think.
So you had said that there's kind of a moment that you pull out separate capital projects. Is that a dollar amount, or what's your criteria for pulling it out?
So just keeping in mind, like, the process of how the capital budget is created, it starts in July. So typically when you approve a bridge, in whatever size, shape, or form, it gets pulled from the block funding of the program, and then it's on capital sheet to be created. In this case, it's superstructures, it's 585. That's the ones that were a bridge program. You won't see one in the bridge program because the bridge program itself is annual bridges. In theory, they're supposed to be done within the year of constructed because they're on a smaller size. But for the multi-year bridges, you will see a capital project the following year after you've approved it.
So I guess just to follow up on what Chair Mattel was saying, sort of what do you do then with the ones that have not yet been approved but are sort of on the larger wish list that are not, what would be the criteria for pulling that out and making that a separate project?
I think I'm not sure there's a number, like, firmly in mind, but of the two that were referenced in the description, one was Rosedale and Smalls. Rosedale is around $700,000 contracted out. Pretty comfortable with that remaining in that kind of bucket capital. However, the scope and scale of Sykes Mills is significantly larger right now, and it's around $3.5 million. It should be less.
So I guess what I'm getting at is, do we come up with a base number and say any project that we think is going to be over that base number has to be pulled out as its own separate capital project, and there can still remain a bucket capital project for your smaller projects?
I think this makes some sense, but the other problem is that you're anticipating an expense, and then as we found out the sort of the hard way around here is any estimate we get, just add like 10 zeros to that number, and maybe we'll be in the ballpark. Of course, I'm joking, but in seriousness, though, unless you actually hit a trigger amount that once it hits that, because they make their work on a bridge, and all of a sudden you start discovering it needs a lot more work than we thought, and it's going to turn into much more of a project and more of a replacement almost than a repair. Without having a set dollar amount, we're never going to see that. We won't see it until it's too late. That's my concern. That's why I really like this. There's still enough support to pass. So, all right. All those in favor? All those in favor?
Hold on. So now... But what we're hearing from them is that separating these out is going to be, I mean, how would you actually do it? Because what we're talking about right now is the substructure repairs, basically, which is Legs Mills and Rosendale. So that's the proposal is for that 220 and 2 million. That's what we're, you know, so we're looking at DPW bridge substructure repairs. And you right now have 220 in design and 2 million in construction for 2024. And you just said that one of them is going to cost over 3 million. So I feel like you're even saying that this needs amending the capital.
We were discussing submitting a resolution that was pulled. The whole project, just looking at it, and yes, this one definitely is a larger scope of work and should be tracked completely separately and made within the program. However, I think this proposed amendment is more global, and I think it has a lot more implications if you look at the full 6 years as far as the number of bridges and being able to. At least that's my understanding, that we're talking about having to add, I would say, dozens of capitals into the program, which I think without thinking this through somewhat more, actually is cross kind of purposes with some of the other discussions regarding the capital. Again, so this goes back to, can we amend something with the TIF list that includes some anticipated costs 5 years out, the plan 5 to 6 years out of bridges, the plan of work? How can we better share that information in what format in the program without creating capital stress?
So right now, what's proposed in the capital is 220 for design and 2 million in the amendment that we're talking about, amendment number 5, for 2024. You're saying that you're going to pull out Leggett Mills, and that's going to become its own capital. You're going to propose a separate capital for that. At which point would you amend the capital program for the 220 and 2 million?
So technical amendment number 2, the bare minimum we wanted to show you was the actual cost. The one you've already approved would now reflect the true cost of Legs Mills in the program. So it would be a 396 and 4.3 million. What amendment starts, the deputy executive Laval's referring to is we're discussing an amendment to pull Legs Mill out of this block funding because of how large the project has become. So that way it'll get its own sheet next year and it would get a further breakdown of the time frame that we're expecting.
But would you at the same time be amending the capital to bring down the $2,220,000 for year 4 in the blanket bucket section?
I'm assuming in the resolution you provide, you take the funding out of this, the superstructure capital to create, it would be a budget neutral capital improvement.
It's right. A substructure. So you take the bridge substructure, you create a new capital for Leggett Mills,
yep.
And you drop the bridge substructure for 2024.
Yep. The portion that is for Leggett Mills would reduce that, and we would create a new capital in the program to amend that for the full fund amount.
But that's essentially what I'm trying to do right now. Yeah, exactly. let's go to Kayla's point. That's what I'm trying to do. So why can we not do that before next week? This is a capital plan. It's not, you know what I mean, we're not locked into it. We're not married to it. But why can't we?
Yeah, so I guess if we know that that's going to happen prior to the capital plan being voted on by the entire legislature, it should be part of it. I mean, why should we wait to amend it next year if we can do it as part of the plan, get it out there, we'll understand it, and move on, right? I mean,
in this one, it came in, sorry. Yeah. In this one, it all came down to timing.
Yeah, I understand.
It was opened a month ago.
Yeah, I understand. I understand.
And I think, if I may, I think I understand your concern is that because what I'm proposing is on a five-year plan, your concern is that how do we, for year 2, 3, 4, 5, give you that breakout of all these capitals that we don't yet know what they are because five years out. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and that's reasonable. Well, your concern is reasonable, too. So, I feel like we've come a long way in like a confusing conversation, but I do feel it would be helpful to the minority leader's point to have the tip or to have a projected plan in not just the one that I propose changes to, but the others, like for us to see, for the legislature to see when it's voting, this is what we're projecting. Again, we know it could change. We know it could change not just because of a storm, but because a priority changes because you realize there's a greater deficiency or we don't have the funds or we don't have the people power or we don't, whatever it is, but we should be going into each year with an understanding of the projected projects that we're looking at, not this general and there's going to be projects, so be ready for some projects. I think it would help us to have a better. That's what this document is supposed to be, really. It's supposed to be giving us projection, and it does always change, and we do very often not live up to it, right, because it's a very aggressive proposal. But I think there needs to be, particularly in this portion of the world, more detail. So I appreciate their point, honestly, about the suggestion that we break it out 5 years. That was not my intention that right now you tell me what's the specific capital for 5 years from now. So I want, because we don't yet know, it's 5 years away. But I want to know what the rest of the committee wants to do in terms of getting this breakout.
Yeah, I would say that, and that's what my resolution or my capital plan amendment is actually to address things like that. If we don't know and we actually have no intention on doing something until year 2, 3, 4, or 5, I don't want to know about it. I don't want to see it on here because we're not ready to do it yet. They can keep that in their reserve plan in the exec office or in the public works department, but we don't need to see it because we're not going to be spending any money and there's nothing for us to budget for. If it's not something that's going to happen in the next coming fiscal year, I don't think it should be on there, which is what my amendment is about.
So, if I may, I mean, I think the idea is we know that in 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 35, we're going to be repairing bridges. Like, we know that. So it's fair in a five-year capital plan, in my opinion, to say, let's just slot in a number for capital, for this, for general. But there's no way 1 year out we shouldn't have, I mean, we should probably have at least a two-year perspective on where you're thinking. Like, give us the next, the lineup of what the bridges are that are coming. And here's an example. Leggett Mills costs more than we think. So So it's gonna be pulled. It's gonna be its own project, not in the general repairs line. But I'm not sure what to do, because I feel like you're understanding the intention of the resolution differently than I meant it, which I meant it very much about this next year being much more specific, which we're getting there.
I mean, that's what I'm trying to get to here. So the things that we know, okay, in year two, you can put any, then what number do you put for year two, three, four, or five? What's the number? Because you don't know. You don't know what projects they actually are, or if you put them in there, how much they're going to cost. You know, this bridge alone is just proving my point of we can do things on the fly. We have the ability to make amendments. We have the ability to change the plans, change the budget. We have that ability. It just takes 1 month's time to do that. And it takes less than 1 month. It was a true emergent situation. We could do it quicker if we had to. These are not things that have to happen in a week's time. These take months on their own. There's no reason why they could not put this in for the next fiscal year. We know what their intentions are. We know approximately because we know what these cost today. Of course, there's swings in expenses, but it's not so dramatic as it would be 2 years in. I see nothing wrong with doing this. You can still look at the crystal.
Yeah. So just in general, I think, you know, like you plan in your own property. You know, I know that I'm going to need a new roof for probably 2 years, so I'm going to plan for that in 2 years. We have buildings that we know we're going to have to replace the boiler. So I think it's the same thing with these bridges. We know, we're getting an assessment of conditions of bridges. Why can't we say that we know in our goal for year three is to do X, Y, and Z bridge. Our goal for year four is blah, blah, blah. You know, and so I don't think there's a problem in it. I do agree that there should be sort of a general bucket of money as well for projects that emerge or, you know, things like that. But I think that we can be more planful and have a forward look in that kind of way.
Yeah, I was going to just say that, I mean, in this moment, what I would love to also have, which isn't in this, in capital plan, is for something like this, where we're talking about, like the flag program, what you're talking about is general buckets, it would be helpful for me to see what we spent in the last 3 years, in the past 3 years, in this, if we're talking about a general bucket, very different than plan. The same way that I can look at a bridge project that started in 18 and design happened in this and this and this, and I can look, you know, I can see the backward look when a project's hanging over. I feel like in the general buckets, I should see the backward look, even though I'm not going to be here, for at least in the past couple of years, so that I know if this request is, we've been needing it, it's reasonable. And that's just a forward suggestion for the next capital plan. Again, specific to these bucket ones.
I think the other thing that we have the ability to do is allow you the flexibility that you need. But if the projects are laid out in the capital plan and you come back to us and you say, hey, we planned for this for 3 years down the road, but we need to do this year, we can easily just amend that and switch it around. So I think that rather than feeling like we're cutting your flexibility, I think that would all still be there. I think it just allows us to lay out a really solid plan for the next 5 years or 6 years, knowing that there's going to be flexibility and that there's going to be changes in it.
I don't know if that makes sense to anybody else, but
try this again. You ready?
Well, I'm not ready. Just because I feel like we're about to say okay, yes, because I think it is important to separate them. But they're saying you're not ready to separate them other than next year. So we're kind of at an impasse because we vote for separating them, and we're just going to get next year separated. So that's what you want.
Okay.
So you're good with just separating next year, and then essentially what I'm hearing you say is that what you want is separated for next year, and then it's going to say zero, or it's just going to have a blank for the following 4 years. Not because we don't plan on doing something, but because we don't have the information yet. Yes?
That's what you're looking for.
Okay, I'm trying.
I'm also going to just move on from this completely if that's sort of the realist, because a lot of time on something that doesn't mean that much to me, to be honest. I'm prepared to move on.
Yeah.
So you guys want to add something before we go here? Let's do that then.
Yeah, and apologize. We're also trying to internalize what is being said and process and try and figure out the best way to be able to, from our side, be able to provide you the information. I think one of the ways that we're thinking about this is proposing an amendment that pulls out Legs Mill as a separate capital project for the capital improvement program for going forward for 24, and providing a backup sheet with the bridges that would be anticipated to be included in the, call it the bucket funding.
Substructure funding?
Substructure and sub and super and bridge.
Good with that too.
Which also means that we need to discuss technical the amendment number two and reconsider how we handle that one.
I'm open to that. That would the way I would imagine it. I'd have to speak to colleagues on what you need. The way I would imagine us handling that, I think, is taking no action on this, and then on the day you'd get us the amendments as soon as possible, and on the sixth we circulate, as soon as we have it, we circulate the amendment connected to this one. We took no action, but the idea being that it'd be introduced that way.
Yep.
That's the functionally, probably the best way to do it.
So that means 684 would be voted on today.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, you mean six. I mean five. CIP.
Oh, so CIPs are there. We're only voting on them.
We just wouldn't. No, we would still vote on 684. We wouldn't have five in it.
Okay. And 684 is the separate. Different.
All right. We'll be able to have this for hopefully next couple of weeks.
We'll try.
Scott still doesn't address my issue, but at this point, I'm prepared to move on.
Okay. Well, we can talk about your issue between now and then.
Again,
because I'm not going to be here. I just heard it.
Okay. I'm sorry. So we're just taking no action.
Yes, I think that's the safest as we work with the executive staff to get more clarity, and also with the insurance that while we're doing that, you might as well also put the tip in the other one as well.
Super, that's what we just talked about.
In the superstructure, we're talking about stuff, let's do super tip. Okay, that would be great. I think the more clarity we can get between now and then.
No,
we don't have to do
all right. Number six, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
I'll second.
Discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Very
thank you. Thank you.
Number seven, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? Share with us.
So this is something, Legislator Green's not here anymore, something that I feel really strongly about. I pushed to get it in the Capitol last year to actually have the study. And I'm going to be voting against this, but not because I don't believe in it. I 100% believe in the project. I'm not sure where it needs to live. We're next week, we have the first meeting of the, I believe it's next week, of the RRA, the new RRA committee, which I will be sitting on, so I will not be totally gone. And that's the place I think where we need to have the discussion first. I don't want to put it into the Capitol
in our capital when it may live somewhere else, but I can assure you that I'm not going to let it go. And so it's not that it's disappearing. I'm strongly fighting for this with all of you, one way or another. I just think we need to let that committee actually do its work.
Number 8 is withdrawn. Number 9, can I have a motion?
I'll move.
A second. Discussion?
Do you want to start with you?
Sure. Mm-hmm. It's exactly what I was saying before. It's things that we have not yet approved and have no expense in the 2024 fiscal year.
Did the exec's office give us feedback?
I think, if I may, from our perspective, having the capital projects that are going to be done in the out years is a benefit to the legislature because it becomes a signaling document to the legislature as far as which projects the executive's office is looking to have done in the future. And from our perspective, this would enable us to be able to convey and communicate to the body some of the projects that we would be in the out years looking at. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's my concern too, because that's the concept. A 5-year plan is supposed to signal what's coming. I mean, that's why it's a 5-year plan. We're supposed to be looking ahead. So I'm just concerned if we take them out when they're not yet approved. I see both sides. Like, we take them out because they're not yet approved, and yet how do we have that signaling?
It's not just that they're not approved. There's no expense in the next fiscal year. Both things have to apply. Mm-hmm. They've not been approved, and they have no expense in the coming year. So that's why I wanted to push it out, because they're not going to happen next year. There's nothing for us to do. There's nothing for us to look at, and then they can come back to us next year and push time and give us and push it out another year, push it out another year. But we never actually get to it. We'd rather see things that we are actually working on and see them happen rather than the wish list, which has no immediate plan to move forward.
And if I may, so you're saying for you the signaling point would be the year before it's about to happen, or the year before we're thinking about it happening, that's the point that it actually makes the plan. It's an interesting, you know, there's some value to that. In addition, you know, the never-ending concern of signaling what we're willing to spend for things when we attach a value to a project that we haven't yet bid out, we run that risk too. So I could go either way. I'm curious what the rest of the committee.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. So would this limit us in, you know, getting any other kind of grants or any other source for funding if we don't have it in there?
I think there is the potential that that could occur, that if we don't have some of these projects in the capital improvement program, it would demonstrate, by having them in the capital improvement program, it demonstrates to potential funders that the legislature is considering and is supportive of a project, which would make it easier for us to secure grant funding, is my understanding.
Right, and further, I mean, some of the things that we're doing here, I mean, so I won't get into, like, the solar installation or the rail trail, but certainly the UCLB water and sewer line replacement, that's something that we have to do, right? Even though we're not going to be doing it in the next year, is there a way that we can identify them so that, you know, future legislators are aware that, you know, this is a big project that's going to come up? You know, rather than having a capital problem. I mean, I hear what you're saying, John. You know, it's like we're not allocating any money, right? But it's in there, but it could potentially be pulled in. I don't know, right?
Forthcoming.
Yeah, forthcoming, right.
But it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Right, the pump house upgrade, which is going to be part of the Golden Hill project, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah.
You know, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, is it hurting anything by being in there? you know, is it does it hurt to have the headlights on these projects that are coming? Or, you know, maybe we, you know, set a policy that says if it's in the capital project for more than 3 years, it's out, you know, something like that. Because I understand what you're saying. It could be just, oh, no, we're not going to do it this year. We're going to do it next. We're not going to do it this year. We're going to do it next, right? So I don't know. It's the kind of thing where if we're not allocating any funds to it and it's in the capital project plan, right, what is it hurting to have it in there? Is there what I mean?
Well, the counter to what it's hurting is what we've all experienced as legislators, right, is that you already approved this in the capital plan. You know, that's the, this executive hasn't said that, but that's what we have absolutely heard. So you already approved it in the capital plan. So that's, I mean, it's, I don't feel like, is it usual for us to have things in the plan that are 3 years out with nothing? I feel like I haven't seen a lot of that before.
No, in the past, I think the capital improvement plan has been what we are trying to do is we're trying to use the capital budgeting and capital plan more effectively and actually looking at 5 and 6 year plans. We're working on this, right? We're trying to get there. And in the past, most of what was included in the capital improvement program were just capital projects for the next year, maybe the year after that. And that was it. So you can see that in the document where you see the spending plan drop significantly in years 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah, so, I mean, for me, I appreciate both sides. I appreciate your concern, but I appreciate that, I mean, some of these projects, we know that they're on the executive's list that have been discussed, like the solar projects and the parodies to something that's been well discussed. I'm not sure about the grant funding aspect, but I don't know.
I mean, keep in mind, you know, the way I look at this is we get the capital plan in July-ish, August-ish, you know, presented to us. How much time do we need to know something is out there in the future? To me, I don't know why we need to know something a year and a half, 2 years out that may not even actually be there. I would rather us clean up the noise, and that's what I'm trying to do is clean up the noise here so we can actually see then these multi-year projects, to actually get them done, and we see what bandwidth we actually have to do. And it's great to have a wish list, but as we've seen, we don't have the bandwidth to do all these things. And if we actually are capable of doing them, fine, put them in. But we're not. We just don't have it.
So I've heard this term wish list a couple times, and I heard it several times during the longer meetings, and I actually wonder if there is something that we could do, which is just simply like our wish list over here, and then here's our capital improvement plan, you know, our capital plan. I think that would be a smart thing, because then it would keep things on the radar for legislators. You know, we could look at it, draft it, but then the plan would be a much more solid plan, which actually has, you know, legs and numbers and date, you know, time frame connected to it. So I don't know if that's something we could create, but that to me would make sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly something that we can look into and think about. I think when we also look at what the charter has, what the charter requires, maybe there's an opportunity for us to leave the capital improvement plan the way it is, but creating a separate document that talks specifically about what is going to be in the capital budget for the following year. That becomes more of a governing type document, whereas the capital improvement program is more of a planning or, like I said, signaling document going forward as to what we're thinking. So I think I want to have further discussions, and especially internally about some of how this should work, but I think your point is well heard.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason that we hear, well, was approved, or we used to hear, that, you know, you approved it in the capital plan, is that it is the capital plan as a 5-year plan. It signals what the exact plan is to do. But when we vote yes, we're affirming it to some degree. And there's always been this argument that, well, I'm not going to vote down the capital plan, even though there are always things in a capital plan that I totally don't agree with and I'm going to vote no to. So it's a general idea. I really can see both sides of the discussion because I think it is important to signal where we're headed, and a 5-year plan demands that if you know, the same way we just talked about the bridges, if you know what's coming down the pike, that you communicate with us, that you say, look, this is what we're intending. It's not going to be next year, it's not going to be the following year, but in 3 years, we're thinking we're going to be asking you for somewhere upwards of $10 million for a solar project. So keep that in your mind. So, but I also hear you saying, like, why do I need to approve that now? And if you don't mind, you know, my colleague here just said, you know, we're leading the legislature and we're about to approve a plan for not even this body, we're the next body, not even the next body we're approving. So, you know, but none of it's not binding until we actually vote on the resolution. Kevin, you're so quiet. What do you think of it?
Just waiting for your turn.
He's waiting for the motion.
I'm just amazed that we're still talking about this.
All those in favor?
In favor.
Oh, right. I'm asking if I'm ever saying it. All in favor? 2, 3. Opposed?
I have to choose, right? No, I'll side with the chair here. I'll
vote. I will too.
Okay. All right. Let's get to that. And as amended.
Motion.
Maybe I can. Second. Okay. Yeah. Votes. Okay. 684.
Oh,
we're still doing business. We're almost there. So moved. Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried? Any new business?
Can we have a really long discussion about bridges?
Any other discussion?
Yeah.
Okay. What you doing,
Karen? A little punchy.
Second?
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank